Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am joined in the studio on the right by my friend, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, everyone.
And on the left by my friend, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie.
Guys, I want to talk about President Trump's visit to Salt Lake City. And I want to start with you, Dan, because I think you were an eyewitness to the event. Give us some color commentary.
Yeah, I was there in full regale. Obviously, you know, for a presidential visit, you got to be there early. The last time George W. Bush came to Utah, I got to go and be at the airport. And, you know, and he came in and I got to shake his hand. That was really cool. This time,
was that the morning of opening ceremony?
No,
this was when he came after being president. Okay,
yeah.
I got it.
No, because it was Air Force One. Air Force One was there.
Okay. Well,
so he was a fundraiser. He was here for a fundraiser.
Yeah, something. Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. So anyway, we got up early in the morning, went out to the little state fair, and they shuttled us from the state fair up to the Capitol, and they didn't allow any of us to park under the Capitol. Because that's where
the Secret Service minding, you know, explosive issues.
Well, and the Secret Service actually, the presidential limo came in and used our parking lot underneath the Capitol and made that as the way to get in and out of the Capitol.
And presidential limo, does in this case it mean black suburban?
No, this was
a limo.
This was the real limo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had the real deal. So that was parked down, kind of where I park at the Capitol. And then, you know, he kind of came in and, you know, Secretary Zinke and Greg Hughes and the governor kind of started things off. And then one of the San Juan County commissioners, a lady of Navajo descent, was speaking as well. And her name, I'm going to butcher. I think it's Benally. Thank you. Commissioner Benally spoke. And so that was kind of a good little warm-up act. And then there was a little bit of a break. And then in comes Donald. And I'll be honest. He filled the rotunda of the Capitol with, it was...
You could feel his presence.
This is the president of the United States, and immediately the presence, the feeling in the Capitol changed as soon as he walked in.
Uh-huh. About 600-700 people there, is that my understanding?
Yeah, I think that was about right.
Yeah. Jim, we got to get you in here. You were not there. Tell us, you know, a little bit. Were all legislators invited and you chose not to attend?
I wasn't invited. Nobody called, nobody emailed, nobody wrote. I don't blame him. I wouldn't have invited him.
Did you show up at the protests?
No, I didn't show up at the protests either.
How are you going to provide color commentary to us?
I was just disgusted by his visit.
Okay.
Well, so can I finish? His time then?
Yeah. Well, there's more because I want to ask you also about a few things. So go again, Dan.
It was a good... I don't care who you are. If it was Obama, I would have wanted to go and be at, you know, if this was, I know this sounds lame, but if it was the dedication of Bears Ears, I think I probably, from a political fan standpoint, I think I probably would have wanted to go and hear the President of the United States speak.
Yeah.
Here in Utah.
How did Greg Hughes end up in the limo and on Air Force One? That's what I want to know.
Well, should we cover more of the visit and then I'll get to that part? Or do you want to get that?
Well, isn't that part of the visit?
So he comes and then we're kind of, you know, the speech is wrapped up. He's walked off stage left and Greg and I are standing on the stage and we're taking pictures behind the presidential steel and the podium. So, you know, we're Secret Service is giving us a couple of weird looks.
Uh-huh.
Next thing you know, Rob Porter, who's former chief of staff to Senator Hatch, he comes around the corner and he says, Greg Hughes. And next thing you know, he's waving Hughes to come with him. Hughes, of course, you're going to follow the president's body, man. Mm-hmm. He follows Porter. And Hartley and I, Greg Hartley, who's Greg Hughes' chief of staff, we're standing there kind of talking for a minute. We're like, is Greg coming? Because we were waiting to walk over to a lunch. And Greg's like, yeah, I don't know where he is. This is kind of starting to feel like a long time. And I said, well, you know, he checks his little Apple app because he has a little tracking, you know, thing to see
where the guy is.
And he's all the way down North Temple. So we're like, that must have been an invite to get on the motorcade.
Yeah, he's not
so
coming
to lunch. So I
talked
to Hughes later that night, and Hughes said, yeah, he got kidnapped into the presidential limo. And so he's riding down with the presidential limo. It's him and Orrin Hatch and the president. And they ride out to the Air Force One. And then he gets out to Air Force One, and he's like, well, do you want to see the plane? And the president gives Greg Hughes a tour of the Air Force One.
That's fun.
This was, and of course,
he's calling him the original.
Yeah.
True Trump.
The original.
May not remember anybody else's names, but Hughes, he's calling the original because he's
That was part of the speech. Yeah. She was saying, "Where's my original? Where's the original?" So, and he's talking to Hughes.
So I will have a column in the print edition of the Deseret News on Sunday, and that will be online before then, about how I received an invite to be at the Capitol from the governor's office that was later declined through the political filtering of the Trump White House. So, you know, you have Secret Service clearance, which I'm confident I would have passed. But I didn't pass the ideological clearance, and I simply write in the column about how that's a crazy process, right? I mean, it shows the problems with the Republican Party, because I don't want to talk about myself, but I mean, I've worked with 3 Republican governors. I've been a presidential appointee in a Republican administration. I attended events with Reagan, with Ford, with Bush, with Clinton, and this White House denied me.
Well,
they denied me too.
Now you might ask the question, why did I want to be there?
I was going to say, with the way you feel about President Trump, what was your thinking for?
Well,
wanting
I think
there?
Two things. I think, you know, I respect the office, but it's history, right? I spent a year as state planning coordinator for our state. That means you're over public lands for the state, and so, you know, I worked in the planning office for 16 years, and so I know public land issues fairly well. So I just thought it was part of history. And when I was there when President Bush came during the Olympics, I was in the governor's office helping with that screening. We didn't do political screening. This is America's president. We just did Secret Service screening. So this was odd to me that it was invitation only if you match the way we think.
Now, I'll just throw this out there. There may be another way that it didn't work out, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So
Jim, last comments on Donald Trump's visit. You said it was disgusting, and maybe you need to add a little bit more depth
to
that.
Look, he came. He spent 3 hours here. When he arrived, Grand Escalante was 1,900,000 acres. When he left, it was 1 million acres, and now Congressman Stewart just can't believe what a great thing he's done to get a national park that's 100,000 acres. It was despicable
almost 200,000
for future generations of Utahns that this land is going to be taken away from the people and sold off, or if not sold off, excuse me, it's going to be coal mined, because there are trillions of pounds of coal there. And make no mistake about it, that's a lot of what this is about. It's getting to that Kaparowitz coal.
So
it's a sad, sad day.
So, Jim, I'm just going to ask you this. Why did President Obama wait until the last days of his presidency from the Hawaiian beach to name Bears Ears? You know his politics. I know his politics. Same reason Bill Clinton went to the edge of Arizona. You know, he went to Arizona, to the edge of the Grand Canyon, to name a monument in Utah. It's politics.
You know, it normally I would agree with you, but this I was firsthand. I was in the White House 3 times. They were serious. Naive, but serious. They thought that the Bishop Public Land Initiative was serious. They thought they were going to bring county commissioners. They kept talking about maps. They kept saying, you know, we're going to sit down. We're going to look at a long-term solution. And Bishop and Hatch and Lee and Herbert and the rest of them were never serious about it. They waited until the week before the session was there, and there was no time to negotiate, never mind pass a bill. It's a pathetic, horrible situation where we could have had this long-term solution, and instead too many played the politics of this. So normally you're right. That's how it goes. But I don't think in this
politics
case—
Politics created it. Politics trimmed it down, Jim. There's
and the
nothing.
Lawsuits will continue.
And the lawsuits will continue.
Hey, guys, we have to jump to break. But before we do that, last week we talked about Rio Tinto Stadium and the property tax break that RSL received. A lot of discussion about how that affected the tax burden of other folks. I just want to be clear and on the record, we are in agreement in the studio that when Rio Tinto's property taxes go down, the property taxes for others go up. That's a little truth in reporting here from both sides of the aisle. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Steve Bannon.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more of our in-house podcasts, visit kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We have to talk about Steve Bannon. And our governor is on the warpath.
Yeah.
He is tweeting things where he's doing, you know, hashtag stay out.
I'm pretty sure he turned over
like
his
stay
Twitter
out of our
account
state.
To Spencer Cox.
Yeah. Tell our listeners what he's been tweeting, because it's out there.
Well, I mean, he kind of started with, you know.
Who Cox this is or Herbert?
Herbert. Okay. It's from the Herbert, you know, account, the official account. I should have looked it up. But basically, he just said, you know, well, we should step back and say, hey, Steve Bannon basically said a couple nights ago that he, you know, that Roy Moore had more integrity in his little finger than the entire Romney family.
Tip of his pinky.
Tip of his pinky.
Little finger.
Yeah. I saw a funny tweet that said this just in, it turns out Roy Moore doesn't have any integrity there either. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Bannon said that Romney hid behind his religion to avoid military service and went over and hung out in France.
Hung out in France. Yeah,
good
that was
heavens.
The thing.
That will not go over well with a Utah audience.
Yeah, I mean, here we just finished talking about the Trump visit and all the positive things that President Trump was trying to accomplish in Utah. And this, I didn't say this in the last episode, in the last segment. I'll say this real quick. I say for a state that is largely, it's not even largely, it is totally a flyover state. No one pays attention to Utah during the presidential races. Mm-hmm. Trump was the first in a long time to come here. Cruz, some of those guys, because it's a more heated race. That being said, Trump did not need to do anything about this national park / monument issue. And
clearly
many could
say, he did it to garner favor with Senator Hatch.
That's right. Well, and honestly, I think he really wants Utah to like him. I think that's my impression after listening to his deal. His greatest praise was for Senator Hatch, and it was for the people of Utah. Okay, so that being said,
he must not care what millennials think about him, because my kids are furious about what he did.
Yeah. So we'll talk about how you need to teach your kids about public lands. But that's another issue. So you get all this positive press in one day, you know, from President Trump and being in Utah. And the very next day, Steve Bannon is off the rails with this kind of ridiculous behavior.
Yeah.
And now he's basically, you know, Chief Weasel, I guess, at one point in the White House. Now he's, you know, he's been released from the White House service. And now he's out there, you know, proclaiming that, you know, insulting basically all of Utah culture.
Yeah.
As much as he
Jim,
can.
Jim, what did you read into this?
Big winner out of the whole Trump visit, Dieter Uchtdorf. He was in town the night before. I don't know. I have no idea. No pipeline, no nothing. But this is the first time I can ever remember, unless somebody was ill, that the first presidency wasn't there. And it was a...
No one from the first presidency was there. Not Irene
giant
either.
Giant...
Elder Iring was.
President Iring was there.
I just...
And of course, President Monson is at, you know, not
so
up
I
want to
get
it,
a t-shirt that says, I'm with Dieter.
I'm with Dieter.
Oh, brother.
And let it be interpreted. There were a lot of jokes going on my Twitter about, well, his English wasn't good enough and he may have been deported, and there was a lot of stuff. I get the sense. I don't know, but I think that was significant. The second thing is, I love these crocodile tears. Hatch and Herbert are so offended about Romney and the Mormons being bashed. Look, let's face this. Bannon is Trump's guy. He is there. He's the voice outside the White House now. And you know what, Governor Herbert? When you
Why do you
lie,
think he's outside the White House?
When you lie down with dogs, you get fleas. So don't be complaining, because you're there with Trump. You're standing by him. He's doing your bidding in all of this. He wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Gary Herbert and Orrin Hatch and the rest of them. So when you go there and you rub up and you take all the advantage from Donald Trump and Bannon, and now suddenly you're outraged, you're lying with those dogs, buddy, and this is what you get, fleas.
Let's do some political strategy thinking here. What is going on with the Hatch-Romney-Trump kind of triangle?
Yeah, I think, look, Donald Trump and Mitt Romney have an interesting history, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And
the picture of them at the restaurant during the transition looms
Remember
large.
How painful that was? How painful that looked?
It looked like a meeting with the devil.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the lighting
or
something.
And the smile that Trump has on his face.
Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway, that whole interesting history back and forth on the things they've said. They're both very wealthy individuals. And I have to believe that, again, I don't know this.
They both have a fighting spirit.
There's a little bit of rivalry that goes on between these guys. There is between Huntsman and Romney as well.
You look at the life that Mitt Romney led and didn't get the presidential spot, and then look at the life that Trump has led and he got it.
Has
it makes no sense. Yeah.
And don't you believe that in that dinner, it was just an attempt by Trump to humiliate Romney?
Yeah,
and he made him apologize ahead of time and say some things. It was a bad moment for Mitt Romney. It showed that the ambitious side of his character. But he's gone out after the president now. I think that was an awful moment for Mitt Romney.
But the political strategist has to look at it. I mean, if Mitt Romney were elected to Senate, President Trump would, you know, have to deal with this looming voice in the Senate.
That's smart.
Yeah.
That is
he's getting rid of Senator
respected.
Well, he's getting rid of Senator Flake, right? Mm-hmm. Another Mormon who's been a protagonist a little bit in the Senate as well.
And you wouldn't be able to get rid of Romney from this state.
I don't think it'd be that easy. He's not from this state, right? If we had a Rushmore, Romney would be on it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a
Dieter Uchtdorf
would be in the middle.
I got Jim to laugh on that one.
Yeah, that was great.
So I just think though you see President Trump, I think his group and I think they've done the math and said, well, the only person who could potentially keep Mitt Romney out of the Senate in Utah is Orrin Hatch running.
The question is, would Romney take Hatch on, or is it only a scenario that he steps in if Hatch steps down?
I personally, if I were to guess, I personally do not believe that Mitt Romney wants to run against anyone. I think he wants to have Utah anoint nominate. He's looking for a calling in some respects, right? Because if he has to get his hands dirty to get the nomination, I'm not sure that's necessarily the race that Mitt Romney wants.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, I think that Orrin Hatch, he's going to want Orrin Hatch to step out of the way and that he won't run otherwise.
Can I say this? I have some regrets in political life. When I was the Democratic Party chair, I knew all of that swallow shirt lift stuff. I knew it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't speak out. I didn't have the guts. I didn't, you know, I went to the media. I tried to do it. I'm sorry that I didn't do that. I'm sorry I didn't have the guts at that moment.
You used too much, you held back.
I held back. Mm-hmm. When a guy was running for the treasurer in Salt Lake County, I knew that he wasn't physically up to the job. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, this is personal. And I wish that I would have said that. The taxpayers have the right to know these things. They're applying for a job. Watching Orrin Hatch walk down that set flight of steps with the president was gruelingly awkward and difficult. It was one step, one there, tug onto that rail. And my question is, do we need to talk about this?
Yeah, it would certainly come out in a campaign. We're talking about the physical stamina and the health and the eyesight and everything of Orrin Hatch.
But it might not come out in a campaign. That's my worry, that nobody, the way this is going, it's going to be January before Orrin Hatch makes his final decision. Somebody will run against him, but nobody of caliber in the Republican Party, and he will be coronated and called and he'll go off again, and it's not going to be there. I hope Mitt Romney gets in, and I hope there's a bruising primary. Not because it'll be better for Jenny Wilson, but it's good for America. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have unanimous decisions when it comes to electing our national leaders and our national representatives. It ought to be grueling. We ought to talk about issues. We ought to talk about character. That ought to be an issue. And Orrin Hatch's loss of stature by what's happened in the last 3 or 4 months, his groveling, his talking, has just been pathetic to see.
Natalie, you're a Mitt Romney fan and have been in that sport.
And I'm a Senator Hatch fan as well, just to be clear.
I wonder how you would feel about that race.
Yeah.
Well,
because you're always, we should have competitive elections. So here's two guys that'd be competitive.
Oh, yeah.
But these two would knock the snot out of each other.
Yeah, yeah. I've never thought Romney would take Hatch on. I just don't think he will. And I've also never thought Hatch would do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, 8 terms in the U.S. Senate.
So one of them is going to be wrong, Natalie. Which
I
one?
I know. And I'll never forget a political insider right after Hatch was elected last time went back to Washington to see the swearing in of the senator. And when he came back, I believe he could have been on this program, but he looked me in the eye and he said, "That man will die in office."
Yes.
And I was just, I'd never heard anything like that. But it was basically after seeing him sworn in as the Senate pro tem, he realized that you don't voluntarily leave that.
Do people know that Senator Hatch has full, not Social Security, but Secret Service, another two S's?
Yeah.
They're all over the place. They're driving him. They're, wow, that is, there's not very many people in the United States that have that. He's one of them.
Yeah, that's so true. Hey, what else do you guys want to talk about? I mean, we've got some local news that might be worth talking about. Let's do Salt Lake City adding 50 new police officers. That's a big deal. It'll probably amount to a tax increase for our capital city.
Mayor only wanted 27. I noticed a lot of the positions are kind of administrative in nature. They're not people on the street. They're kind of helping out with the bureaucracy, and taxes are high in Salt Lake City. I mean,
really?
I would have looked, wait,
liberals saying there's a tax they won't pay?
I would have
has
gone
to be for law enforcement.
Let's go with the mayor's proposal of 27 and see if we need the rest of them before we start squeezing everybody's property taxes.
Dan, what'd you think of the Time Person of the Year? Do you know what this
issue? That Me Too became the Time Person of the Year.
I think the sexual assault, harassment, silence breakers.
I'm hopeful that this Me Too thing is a change of conversation, a change of culture. My fear is, and I'm starting to hear this behind the scenes, I don't know if anybody else is hearing it this way also, but I'm starting to hear that there are people afraid of having women around their office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing.
No,
it's such a dumb thing. But
I have seen a work colleague of the opposite gender that I've hadn't seen for a long time and given him a hug.
Yeah.
And every time I'm sort of like, whoa, this feels different now.
Yeah.
So it is different. I totally agree with you.
I'm perfectly fine at having women around the office.
Hey, guys, one other. I hate to keep jumping back to Trump, but he did something really unbelievable this week in designating Jerusalem as the location for the U.S. Embassy.
Yeah.
And the minute I heard that, and you all know I've just been back to both Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, it's disputed territory. It's disputed lands.
Yeah.
You know, and so the ripple effects that this will send through the Middle East, we will pay a price for this. I hope they have a strategy.
It's not. Look, they have held this as a carrot from the U.S. deciding this decision for, since the 90s. The last I remember there was a congressional resolution in favor of this. I remember listening to President Trump's announcement earlier today that there was a congressional resolution that gave him the opportunity, every president since, they've made this decision every couple of years, to grant a waiver saying, okay, we can keep our embassy where it is and not move, from Tel Aviv, that kind of deal. Sure enough, that despite that resolution was in place, everybody seems like it's so shocked. I think the nice thing about this, and actually, I'm actually quite happy about it, candidly.
Don't you think, though, that there's a huge risk to the United States?
There is always a risk in that region.
We just put in more fuel into the fire.
But what President Trump has proven is that our light hand on the scale has done nothing for us over the last 20 years. So by putting a heavy hand on the scale, maybe that changes the environment of things.
And I'm hopeful that he's right. My attitude is that after visiting Israel, I mean, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, the light hand, they're a very prosperous nation.
Yeah, they're not struggling.
Jim, anything to add there? Do you want to?
What's the upside? I mean, the downside is so horrendous. Mm-hmm. And what even one thing other than making this little group of his supporters happy, upside?
Oh, no, Jim. You have no idea what this means to the Israeli officials. This is a big deal.
Yeah, I heard Benjamin Netanyahu.
He's president of the United States, not the president of Israel.
They have forgotten. They have felt forgotten for the last few presidencies.
How many American boys and girls dying, is that worth making Netanyahu feel happy?
Hopefully none.
Dan, I know you've got a gripe ready for us. Let's
go
to it.
Yeah, so I plugged in my phone the other day, and every once in a while I get the Both Sides of the Aisle podcast comes up, and I get these things. And every once in a while, I regret we don't do this because the format really doesn't allow for it. But we should have like a scoreboard of who's right and who is wrong from generations before, right? And Jim and I got into this healthy debate about something, and I was totally right back then, and time has proven that I was totally right even to today, and I don't see a scoreboard yet.
I get that.
That's my gripe.
Jim,
okay, mine really quickly. Lieutenant Governor Cox came down to the first ever youth conference of LGBTQ kids all across the state, hundreds and hundreds at Utah Valley for all day Saturday, last Saturday, gave an inspiring, incredible speech. Salute to you, Spencer Cox.
Good to hear. Hey, happy holidays, everybody. I get to skip my gripe because we're out of time, but it's been great being with you with Senator Jim DeBacchus, Representative Dan McKay, and our producer, Emily Means. Thanks for listening.